This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. My co-host Anthony Brooks is out today. Last week, Governor Deval Patrick announced a major new initiative to reduce recidivism rates among young male offenders in Massachusetts. ROCA, a Chelsea social service agency, is administering the new program. But what's even more intriguing is how the state plans to pay for the $18 million effort. It won't pay for it. So who will? Enter Goldman Sachs. The investment banking firm and five other organizations are financing the project. The initiative is now the nation's largest so-called pay-for-success program, or social impact bond. Note that I said they're financing the project. It's not a grant. It's a loan. And Goldman and others expect to be paid back with interest, that is, only if ROCA succeeds in keeping young men out of jail. Other states have tinkered with social impact bonds in the past, but Massachusetts is at the tip of the spear in experimenting with this way of funding social services. It's a bold new experiment with some big consequences. So let's talk about both of those now with Jeffrey Liebman. He's a professor of public policy at Harvard, where he directs the Social Impact Bond Technical Assistance Lab. Professor Liebman, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, I mean, give us the nuts and bolts on how social impact bonds work, because it's not that often that you hear of, you know, big investment banks like Goldman Sachs being interested in anything close to reducing recidivism rates in a state.
The basic idea is that instead of paying for services directly up front, like usually occurs when the state purchases social services, it writes a performance-based contract and says, deliver services for a couple of years, then we'll measure outcomes for a couple of years, and if your services really worked, then we'll pay you, and if they don't, we don't have to pay, and basically it's a money-back guarantee for taxpayers.
Okay. So, let's get into this a little deeper. In the case of the ROCA anti-recidivism program, it seems like they have an effort for including, 1,000 more young men in the program, and they want to reduce the recidivism rate by some 40% over the next several years. That's quite an aggressive target. What happens if they don't meet that goal?
So the payments are on a sliding scale. There's a minimum performance target to start getting paid at all. And then as the performance improves, if they hit a 40% target, basically everyone breaks even and gets a little bit of interest payment. And if they do better than 40%, there can be bonus payments up to $1 million worth of performance payments, basically, that happen for each of the investors if they get to sort of extraordinary levels of performance.
Okay. And just forgive me for being a little thick here, but I want to be sure we understand this, because it's a somewhat complex new social instrument here we're talking about. Who does the paying back if these targets are hit? It's the state that pays investors back, essentially.
Absolutely. There's no magic money here. If it works, the state pays. What's different here is if it doesn't work, the state doesn't pay. With traditional spending, you spend regardless. You never measure what happens, and you pay regardless of whether it works. The real breakthrough here is linking the payment to performance. And it's also it provides a better way for government to collaborate with successful nonprofits to expand services, because it builds a 4 to 6 year collaboration where everyone is focused on this outcome target. And so rather than funding things, you know, every year wondering whether you're going to have the resources to continue to make your payroll if you're a nonprofit, here's a 4 year contract to scale up and really deliver services in a sustained way and see if you can prove that your program works.
Mm. And so to be clear, if the program doesn't meet its targets, it's those initial investors like Goldman Sachs who are taking the risk. They're the ones who don't get their money back.
That's right. About half the money comes from Goldman, about half from a consortium of nonprofits. And ROCA itself has agreed to have 15% of its service payments at risk as well. And so if they don't meet their targets, they lose as well.
Okay. And just to be clear, I said $18 million a little earlier. That's incorrect. I think the overall program is in the $27 million range. So just a quick correction there. Now, I understand that this idea of social impact bonds or pay-for-success programs first originated overseas in the UK. So they've had a couple years advance experience on this. Have we learned any lessons from English programs that have gone through this?
So as you say, that the first program was a similar recidivism project in the UK. It's still too early to know for sure whether it achieved better outcomes. But I think the Massachusetts project and also the New York State project that launched last month are innovative relative to the UK project in two ways. One is they're big enough and long enough that by the time it becomes time to make a decision about extending the services, we'll already know what happened. And secondly, they're the first two to measure the outcomes using a randomized control trial. So there are more people to serve than can be served by this project, and they're going to have a lottery, essentially, serve some and compare the outcomes to the ones who didn't get served. And so that means the state will really know whether this program is working.
Yeah. So let me just raise a couple questions that people might have about how unusual the bedfellows are in these social impact bonds, because I wonder, there may be some folks out there who just have a natural distrust of the motivations of investment banks or other for-profit investors, and they might think, what is it that those investors believe they stand to gain by investing in these social services over a long period of time at a relatively low return rate?
Yeah, I think the commercial investors have a mix of pecuniary and non-pecuniary motives going on here. At the launch last week with Governor Patrick, the representative from Goldman Sachs said that his firm has a broad view of what makes an economy strong, and then that therefore makes their firm profitable, and that making sure that people who are not successful in the labor market can be successful is an important part of having strong communities where Goldman will make money. And so I think they see their community action as aligned with their for-profit action. I also think there's a chance that this technique spreads broadly enough that it actually will be profitable, especially as we get better at figuring out which projects are going to be successful and therefore lowering the amount of risk.
And it seems as if these social impact bonds are they're getting a lot of attention now. I mean, the Massachusetts effort launched last week is, what, the nation's largest at the moment. But many other states are considering trying or either have been or considering trying similar things. Why is it so garnering so much interest right now, you think?
I think the fundamental reason is that budgets are so tight. And so even when you know that there is a intervention you can do that will yield better outcomes and also save money for taxpayers, you can't afford to fund it because you'd have to cut something else that you already think is essential. And what this is allowing innovative governors, and as you said, Governor Patrick was first, but now we've seen Republican governors like Governor Haley and Governor Kasich do this, and Democrats like Hickenlooper and Cuomo, what I think they see is this is a way in these tight fiscal times to continue to try to tackle social problems and do it in a way that both solves these problems and saves money for the taxpayers.
Listeners, I'm speaking with Professor Jeffrey Liebman. He is a professor of public policy at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government and director of the Social Impact Bond Technical Assistance Lab. We're talking about Massachusetts' new effort about using social impact bonds to fund a brand new program to reduce recidivism rates amongst young men in the state. Professor Liebman, if you could just stand by for a moment, I'd like to bring in John Pratt. He's the executive director of the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits. He joins us from St. Paul, Minnesota. He's got a bit of a different view on social impact bonds. John Pratt, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So I've read your writing, and you say you want to believe in the power of social impact bonds, but you're not quite there. What troubles you about them?
Well, I think it's easy to see why it's gotten so much attention and enthusiasm. I think, you know, it's important not to oversell the benefits, and some of the benefits have been described as this is new money, better results, and even it's kind of an end run around the lack of political will. And I think ultimately it's the same results we'd get by other service providers, and so we could say ROCA is already contracting with the state of Massachusetts to provide similar services. So there's nothing new in the service itself. The real innovation is in the financial transaction.
And I note that you've also written that you're concerned about the fact that what are the programs that might be most attractive for these investors, for these social impact bond investors, and they may not necessarily be the programs or the people who are in most need of social services and help in a state.
Yes, and it can even create kind of perverse incentives because it's going to require judgments about who goes back to a juvenile facility, who goes back to prison. In Salt Lake City, Goldman Sachs has underwritten a social impact bond where the goal is to reduce special education referrals by 95%, which means whoever is doing the testing of children is going to be under incredible pressure to come up with this result.
Professor Liebman, let me get your response to that.
Well, I think John's right that if one doesn't design these carefully, they can not be effective. And the question is, can you design an outcome metric that actually captures what the social objective is? And if you can't, this would be a terrible tool to use for that project. But in the projects we're doing here in Massachusetts, one of them is around housing homeless individuals and thereby, we hope, reducing Medicaid expenditures. And the other is the one we've been talking about, where the outcome metric is simply how many days do people spend incarcerated in the future. That measure of incarceration is both a good measure of what we're trying to prevent, which is having people commit crimes and get locked up, and it's also a good measure of where the savings are coming to the Commonwealth, because if one isn't incarcerating people, we're not spending money on them.
Right, but if I may, I mean, let's take the example, the Salt Lake City example that John Pratt was just talking about, and one of the measures there, it seemed, is it was a direct reduction in the number of students who were classified or needed special education assistance, and it seems an easy way to meet that goal is to just directly reduce the number, whether or not they're actually getting the assistance they need. I mean, I guess what I'm getting to is that there are people who are concerned that the pressure of from the investors to meet those goals might supersede the actual initial intent of the program itself.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're doing a pre-K investment like the one in Salt Lake City, you'd be in better shape if you made the outcome measure third grade test scores or some kind of achievement measure rather than whether services were received.
John Pratt, even given your concerns, I mean, we heard what Jeffrey Liebman said earlier, that states and state budgets around the country are very financially strapped right now. Why not welcome this new, new funding stream, especially when it comes at no financial risk, more or less, to a state?
Well, it's not actually new money. So in the Massachusetts case, the legislature will still have to appropriate funds to pay. And I understand the argument that, well, if it doesn't work, we don't pay. But if it does work, you do pay. And this is an argument you hear in almost every legislative hearing, is if we expend funds for everything from vaccinations to early childhood education, this saves money, sometimes the multiplier effect, and even in the State of the Union address, this kind of current investment means future savings. The difference here is they're trying to monetize it, but you still have to pay the bill at the other end. Mm.
Well, John Pratt is the executive director of the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits, speaking to us from St. Paul today. Mr. Pratt, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Jeffrey Liebman, let me just ask you a final question. I mean, we've been talking about recidivism rates and that being the target here for this new project. Finally, I mean, do you see any limits to where these social impact bonds can be used? Transportation, schools, anywhere?
Yes. I mean, this is not going to take over all social service spending. There's a set of policy areas where there's a tight link between social services and future savings and where we can measure the outcomes that this is a good fit for. And I think that includes early childhood investments. It includes homelessness. And it clearly includes recidivism. Connecticut has just expanded services to provide drug treatment for families in the child welfare system. So there are a bunch of areas where this will work, but there are a bunch of others where this would be a very bad fit. And in particular, things where if it failed, you'd have to shut down an entity and deprive people of services. You wouldn't want to fund a charter school this way. You wouldn't want to actually fund a jail this way. You want something where you can afford to fail without doing harm to individuals.
Well, Jeffrey Liebman is a professor of public policy at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government and director of the Social Impact Bond Technical Assistance Lab. Professor Liebman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks. Good to be here.
And listeners, let us know your thoughts on the efficacy and promise in social impact bonds. We're at radioboston.org and welcome your comments there. But stay with us. There's more of the show in just a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.